I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another incredible episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by King's Comics in Sydney with two incredible hosts.
Yep.
Did I already use the word incredible to describe the podcast itself?
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Yeah, me neither. Her name, Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
My name, Andrew Levins. And every week we read all of comics that came out last week, let you know which were the ones that we enjoyed the most, and also sometimes the ones that we did not enjoy as much as those ones that we enjoyed the most. I'm very hungover.
Yeah.
You don't even hear it in my voice, which has dropped a few octaves. I had double hungover.
Double hungover.
I really, just like when you don't really let Saturday's hangover kick in, just get right back into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly it's Monday.
Yep.
And your kid's kicking you in the face because someone needs to take him to school. Then.
Seems rough.
You get on a train and reading's the worst.
Yeah, using your eyes.
Yeah.
At all.
In fact, I got a train home. It was a relatively early event last night. And I was on a train home, like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll finish the last of these comics while I'm like out of my mind drunk on a train. Didn't even get them out of the bag.
Oh.
Instead, set four alarms, fell asleep.
I'm always terrified of falling asleep on a train.
You just got to let it happen.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's the responsible thing to do.
That doesn't seem like good advice at all.
The alarms worked.
Oh, good. That's good.
All four of them
went
off, and eventually I got off the train just in time. To fall asleep in a cab from the station to my house. Anyway, let's begin this episode like we do every other episode and talk about the number ones that came out last week. We should let you know that every comic that we talk about on the show, like every week, is available and given to us from the good folks at King's Comics in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street if you are ever in town, or kingscomics.com. And if you are in town this Saturday, there's no better day of the year to come to King's Comics unless you hate crowds, because it's free comic book day this weekend.
Woo!
Where all the publishers put out a free book, free comic book, that retailers buy lots and lots of copies of and encourage everyone to come down and say hello and buy some more comics while they're getting free ones, dress up, get into the spirit of things.
Have fun.
Siobhan has been organizing this day for a long time.
Yep.
So if you want to show some appreciation for the show and to King's Comics for allowing this show to happen, the best thing for you to do is come and say hello to us on Saturday at,
absolutely,
at King's.
And there's cool stuff too. Like Tom Taylor's going to be there. Nicholas Scott's going to be there. Mm-hmm. Andrew Constant, who we're going to be talking about later, is going to be there. A couple of other bros.
Yeah.
You're going to be there.
Lots of comic people are going to be there. You can get some things signed. You can even get some pictures of yourself drawn as a Simpsons character.
Yes.
By Dean Rankin. Of course, all the free comics. Lots of discounted stock from King's as well.
Yep.
It's a great
20%
day. Off. Great day to be a King's, to be a comic book reader. And a great day to bring your kids as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. Show off what a fun time a comic book experience can be.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say at least half as hungover as I am today, at the very least. And I'll be walking up and down the long line at the front doing trivia questions.
Yep.
And so when you get asked, what kind of hangover did I have on Monday? You can say a double hangover. That'll be the first question.
Have you started writing trivia, or are you just going to like wing it?
I probably could wing it. I mean,
I reckon
I'm like 80% right on this show. So, like, yeah.
I reckon 75.
Okay. Jim reckons 60. Somewhere in there,
yeah,
is the correct answer. But yeah, I've planned a few things.
Okay.
It's gonna be a fun mix of like Marvel trivia, DC trivia,
nice,
other publisher trivia,
excellent.
Relatively few Image trivia,
yeah,
questions, just because I think the majority of the kids in there haven't kept up with all 320 issues of Savage Dragon.
Lazy.
Yeah. So let's kick off the show. First things first is the segment in which we review all the number ones that came out last week. All these brand new series have started. And I don't know if anyone let you know, Siobhan, but Marvel are well and truly back on their bullshit this week.
They sure are.
With the Hunt for Wolverine event starting. The original beloved Wolverine character, Logan himself, died in the event. Very, very creatively named event, Death of Wolverine,
yep,
a few years ago.
So sad.
And that was written by Charles Soule. And Wolverine, you know, we saw him show up at the end of the Marvel Legacy one-shot.
Yep.
We know
when
that
he was driving
back.
His truck that just said beer on it,
yep,
the big beer truck.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
And now everyone else in the Marvel Universe is aware that he is back. And it's up to four separate teams to start four separate series in which they search for Wolverine.
Well, it's about time.
And Hunt for Wolverine is, it's written by Charles Soule with art by David Marquez with Rochelle Rosenberg. And then there's a backup with art by Paulo Sequeira, Walden Wong, and Ruth Redmond, also written by Charles Soule. The bulk of the story is kind of like the reveal of what happened to Wolverine's corpse when they found it entombed in
adamantium
at the end of the Death of Wolverine. The X-Men moved his body to like this a kind of hut in the middle of the bush as like a temple to for those who need to go and visit Wolverine. But this I think the coolest moment of this book is when they realize that Kitty Pryde can phase Wolverine's body out of the adamantium.
Yeah.
And so they're able to give him a proper burial.
Yeah, that was nice.
But this has the Reavers trying to break in to where his body, well, where they presume his body was left. And when they cut open the adamantium, they realize that he's not there. And then the X-Men realize that he's also not where they buried him. So it is now up to all of these different teams to try and find Wolverine. So the main story is the realization that he's not buried where they thought they buried him. And we get like a brief moment of what he's doing now, which is what he does best, killing people violently.
Yep.
But then we have like this kind of like 10-page backup, which kind of sets up all the other books in which different teams look for Wolverine, I guess. And there's some like really good creative talent on those books. It's like Jim Zub is writing one about called Mystery in Madripoor, which looks like a fun one. Tom Taylor is doing one called The Adamantium Agenda. Charles Soule is doing one with Daredevil, because I think for no other reason that Charles Soule is the
Daredevil,
who's the writer at the moment.
Yeah.
Interestingly, not a Darth Vader Wolverine crossover.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Because
Soule's writing that too. And then Mariko Tamaki is doing one called Claws of a Killer with Sabretooth. And yeah.
Bah.
The setup for this was really just, I mean, just Daredevil's existence in this just makes no sense at all.
Yeah, I know. And like they make a big point of that. Like, why did you get Daredevil? It's like, because he's a detective. No, he's not. He's a lawyer.
I want to say that the dumbest thing in the backup, though, is I think the worst depiction of boobs in a superhero comic book that I've seen in a while.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, Kitty.
It's not great.
Kitty Pryde's boob is particularly pancakey.
Mmm.
A potential name for the episode.
Lovely.
Particularly pancakey. it is like, you know, classic Marvel, like, you know, vague setup for all these different series with terrible art for some of those setup. But the I thought the main part of this issue was pretty good.
Ah, look, it's largely fine. Kitty just has no personality anymore. She's like a
serious
blank slate.
One.
Yeah, serious hero leader one. That's about it. Cool. That's fun.
Yeah, but she's a serious. She's like, which is the boring Ninja Turtle? That's one of our trivia questions. You can find the answer to that on Saturday.
Very much depends on your personality.
That's right. But also from Marvel this week was the Thanos Annual number one. Very well timed in that it came out the same week that Infinity War, the latest movie in the MCU, came out.
I haven't heard of it.
Also known as Iron Man 19.
Right. That's good. Did you like it?
It's an Angus Trusker joke, by
did
the way.
Did you enjoy it? Good job, Angus.
I fucking loved it. Yeah, like, cool. You know, and we did the latest episode of Hey Fam, like a 2-hour discussion of how much we enjoyed it. Like, I don't think that these movies are above criticism, but it has been very funny seeing, like, you know, the New Yorker, like, tear this to shreds, saying that it's like a one giant advertisement and then blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, this is like as good as this kind of movie gets. And like, and like, there's a ridiculous thing that's like, it expects the audiences to have seen every other movie in the MCU leading up to this one. Not only that, but also expects you to have like thought about them afterwards.
Mm.
And it's like, man, have you like read a comic?
Well, that's
have you watched
exactly
a TV
it.
Series? Have you? Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like a slightly new-ish format for movies. I think superhero comic book readers are pretty used to this sort of thing. Like, it's an event.
But like, you know, you don't watch the third Godfather and be like, "What? Why are they talking
like
this? Who
the fuck's that guy?"
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed the movie. And if you want to go listen to our episode, it's on Hey Fam. It's the most recent one up there. Go check it out.
Yeah, cool.
But Thanos Annual, this is kind of like a direct sequel to the finale of Donnie Cates' and Jeff Shaw's really good Thanos run that they just completed. And it features a number of mostly like comedic Marvel writers teaming up with some of their best art talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what's funny about this one to me is that it comes hot on the heels of Action Comics 1000,
yep.
which was an anthology, like a collection of short stories by some of their best creatives. And, you know, we reviewed it last week or the week before. We didn't really enjoy it.
It wasn't good.
And this, I thought, was going to be similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
but it was good.
It was great. So you have Donny Cates and Jeff Shaw and Antonio Fabella, who were the that was the creative team behind the Thanos run, doing the first story. The whole thing is told from the point of view. These are all tales that are being told by the cosmic Ghost Rider, who it was revealed was Frank Castle, after making multiple deals with cosmic
various
beings.
Devils.
Yeah, and this is him kind
of taking this character to the bank.
Telling these stories of, like, you know, the worst things that he heard of Thanos doing. So you have a story of, you know, the things he used to do to Gamora when he was raising her. Then you've got Chris Hastings and Flaviano and Federico Blee doing a kind of really funny take on the Superman story for the man who has everything, the Alan Moore story, where it's like every year this Thanos just shows up on this kid's birthday and just like does something horrible to his day. And that was really
very funny.
It's really amusing, but very dark.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well.
All of these were. Of these were like really funny, or like quite beautiful, and then really sad and tragic in the end.
Kieran Gillen did a really good one. My favorite was probably the Ryan North's. Actually, no, my favorite was definitely the What to Get the Man Who Takes Everything, but the Ryan North and Will Robson and Rochelle Rosenberg book about, which is called That Time Thanos Helped an Old Lady Across the Street, in which he just helps someone, an old lady, across the street, and then you're like, oh, that's a nice weird act for him to do, and then it's revealed that, like, in doing that, he stopped the old lady from bumping into someone, and that someone would go on to, like, you know, create a cure for all these cancers, and Thanos saw into the future and realized that he could stop that from happening and thus, you know, allow more life to die. it's really, really dark and funny. The final story is by Al Ewing and with excellent art by Fraser Irving. The only story within it that I didn't really like that much was Katie Cook's My Little Thanos.
Man, I really liked that one.
Yeah, for me, there was just a bit of a Happy Tree Friends kind of vibe about it, which never really sits with me very well.
No, I didn't like it, but I thought that it was pretty funny. The closing line is, mass grave, it's like hugging. That's pretty funny. In a slightly pathetic, dark way.
But yeah, like, brilliant art and really, really fun stories that understood the character, but were also just entertaining in their own right.
Absolutely.
I mean, it helps that there are far less stories about Thanos than there are Superman in the first place. But I think having this kind of, like, even though it's quite vague, you know, he's just, you know, Cosmic Ghost Rider is telling these stories.
Yeah.
Having that as a thematic thing that tied everything together worked really well. And then the final page was just a setup for this Cosmic Ghost Rider series that I didn't even know was coming.
Cool surprise.
And like when it's revealed who Frank Castle has been telling all these stories to, I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. Mm. And I realized, again, that can be easily compared to Action Comics 1000, where the final story was Bendis setting up what he would do in his Man of Steel series that coming to us soon, that just failed to, like, you know,
make anyone excited about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, certain people, I'm sure. But like for me personally, I was just like, ugh. Yeah. Whereas this does more in one page, like three kind of boxes. To get me psyched about a series that I didn't even know existed. That was cool.
Absolutely.
So
this was great.
This
Good
is a really, really, really great example of an anthology collection of short stories, you know, or an annual done really well. So yeah, check this one out over Action Comics 1000. That's my hot take.
Yeah, agreed. Superman.
Do a variant of this one, Nicholas Scott.
Yeah, I want to see Thanos' sweet dick. I'm sorry.
New name for the episode. Is my hangover contagious?
I'm trying to stop drinking as much coffee as I have been.
So oh, right. I'm a bit almost mental pretty similar. And tired. So I tried to read The Prisoner and Jeepers Creepers, number ones that came out through Dynamite, and made only a few pages in, so let's skip those.
I tried to read The Prisoner as well, because I've always thought the concept seemed really funny, but I've never managed to actually get into it.
But the licensed book that I did read, the new number one for from Dark Horse, was Aliens, Dust to Dust, written by Gabriel Hardman. I think drawn by him, possibly, too. Yeah, script and art by Gabriel Hardman with colors by Rain Barreto. This was just a straight-up like horror book set on like a planet not unlike ours. That is suddenly invaded by aliens. And when a book, it's about a mother and her daughter, except the first panel is of the mother like with a facehugger alien on her head.
Oh, no.
And then even though she, you know, gets up and is fine for a minute, you know what's going to happen to her. Because, you know, we've all enjoyed the Aliens movies. That finally does happen on the last page.
But I'm glad I didn't read this.
It's a real bummer of a book, but I feel like the aliens stories, you know, they are bummers. Like,
yeah.
The aliens, like,
everyone dies.
Well, it's not even like the fact that the aliens fucking suck. Like, it's the fact that like the future depicted in these stories sucks to begin with.
Absolutely.
So it's always so dire for everyone involved.
Yeah.
Gabriel Hardman's art is excellent. He does a great job of, you know, hiding the aliens in the shadows to make them even creepier. So it's, you know, very rare for you to see the full shot of the alien fully exposed in full light. It's a, you know, very dark book.
Yeah, cool.
With just some excellent action scenes by Hardman.
Gorgeous.
He's so good.
Gabriel
Hardman did, he's done a lot of horror stuff in the past. He did an amazing one shot that we reviewed for Image. It came out like last year sometime. It was about like a belfry and like maybe someone like turning into a bat or some shit.
It
was called The Belfry or something. Yeah, that was really good.
Mm.
He's an excellent you know, writer and artist. And just like James Stokoe, who did the last Aliens miniseries, I think this is going to be a really fun, being gross and grim.
Yeah.
Aliens miniseries.
Cool.
So definitely check this out if you're an Aliens fan or a fan of horror. Final number one that I read or tried to was Black as Fuck, Black AF, Widows and Orphans. Now, this is originally a series that came out through Black Mask, written by the creators Kwanza Osayefo and Tim Smith III. And they are still the writers of this series, but yeah, it's called Widows and Orphans. It used to be a black and white book.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the first couple of issues were quite slow, it culminated in quite an excellent ending. Which I was happy that I stuck it through it all. This one has, written by Kwanza Osayefo with pencils and inks by Tim Smith III. But this is colored by Derwin Robertson. I don't know what it is, but I loved Tim Smith III's art in the original series, but I just did not connect with it in this one here.
Yeah, I found this actually like quite difficult to follow what was going on. I actually didn't make it through the book.
Yeah, I'm the same
here. I really struggled, which I'm disappointing in because I really liked the first series.
But part of me stopping was I know that they released like a little trade recently called Black as Fuck. So I think this is a direct sequel to that as opposed to the original series. So maybe I should read that little trade and then come back and see if I enjoy this a bit more. But this was pretty hard to follow.
Yeah. I was confused.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we'll not be continuing with that one.
Did you actually read this one?
I did read that one.
Yeah, cool.
So Vault Comics put out another book called Deep Roots.
Written by Dan Waters, colored by Truna Farrell, art by Val Rodriguez, lettered by Aditya Bidikar. And this is kind of more like slightly Irish folklore-y Celtic weirdness.
My favorite.
You love that shit, if there is one thing I know about you. That's offensive. I really liked this, though. I thought this was cool. It's like people made of vegetables attacking banks.
It was like M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yes, please. I watched The Happening like really recently, and I think about it all the time.
That's so funny. Constantly. Why? Was it your idea or Nate's?
No, it was Nate's. Nate was like, I really liked The Happening. I was like, cool, let's watch it, because I love Marky Mark. And I think about it every time I see like a bush rustle. Have you seen it?
No.
No, okay. It's compelling.
Like a rustling bush makes you think of The Happening.
Yes, if you've seen The Happening, that makes sense.
I know the premise of The Happening.
Yeah, so every time I see like a tree moving, I'm like, oh, it's The Happening. So finally.
In this one, trees, vegetation is able to manifest itself as like a person-like figure.
Yeah.
And they start robbing banks and killing people.
Yeah, because they hate capitalism.
Yeah.
They're vegetables that hate capitalism. It's way more like, as if that's not super compelling. I really like it.
I think it wasn't pulpy enough for me. I think it tried to explain what was happening in quite a serious way, which I just didn't need. If it was like just leaning into how silly this situation was, I think I would have enjoyed it more. But there was a lot of exposition and back lore of the Irish kind that I was just like, I don't need this in my life.
I liked it. And I also liked that the cast was like 80% female.
That was great.
I'm way more like willing to overlook things if it's a female cast, to be honest.
Yep.
But I thought it was cool as hell. It's sort of like, I feel like there were a lot of books this morning that are like, sorry, last week, not this morning. They're like, I have a message.
Right.
Here's my message. But I'm kind of on board with that. We live in overly politicized times. Have a message. Go for it. Yep. Have fun.
I really enjoy the art on this one. I will say this art much.
It's really gorgeous. Good colors too. And some of the pages that are set in this kind of, like spiritual Irish realm, whatever, other alternate universe kind of vibe, have vaguely sort of Van Gogh look to it, which I thought was cool.
Awesome.
It's nice.
So that was Deep Roots, the final of our number ones that we'll review this week on the show. Now we play a game called Roll the Dice for Marvel, Image, or DC. If I roll a 1, it is Image. If I roll a 2, it is DC. And if I roll a 3, it's Marvel. Rolling the dice first, and it's Image first. And then it's Image again, and then it's Marvel.
Great.
So we do Image, Marvel, and then DC this week. Thank you so much to who made the dice?
Brad.
Brad. Thanks, Brad Love,
Love,
for making the dice for us.
We love you.
Three-sided die. So we're going to do Image first, which means we get to talk about the book that we love to talk about as often as possible, which is Kill or Be Killed.
Yes, please.
Voted the best book published by someone besides the big three in our 2017 awards.
Yep, good.
Which were televised in every country on every channel.
Yeah, I was really amazed by that.
It was worth the cost.
Absolutely.
I can't even find, where are my Image books? Where'd I put them? Damn you, hungover brain. What did you do? What have you done now? There it is.
There they are. There they are.
So Kill or Be Killed, issue number 18, written by Ed Brubaker with Sean Phillips and Elizabeth Breitweiser on art duties. They're the best creators working together in the game.
They've got to be one of the most solid teams.
And where Siobhan said a minute ago that you found a lot of books this week had a real message to tell, I found a lot of books were over-explaining a mystery.
Mm.
We had lots of detective work being done in comics this week, and led for a lot of very exposition-heavy action. Made me long for the days where it would be first-person narrated in comics. That's like one of my favorite things of like the 80s era of Batman comics, is that it was all first-person narration.
You hate first-person narration a lot of the time.
Unless it's Batman.
If all things were first-person narrated by Batman, that would be way better.
I think mystery, like detective stuff,
I like
it when you get the detective's first-person narration, because then it makes sense that they're thinking out the mystery in their heads instead of talking it out loud to other characters.
Absolutely, because then you don't just get like the mystery as they see it, you also get their thought process, which is pretty good fun.
Definitely.
I miss the days of thought balloons. I feel like thought balloons are massively underused.
And that's how a lot of Batman comics told the detective side of things.
Yeah.
So Kill or Be Killed is first person narrated by our main character, who we don't know if he's a really a good guy or a bad guy, or sort of we don't know if he's sane or crazy. Mm-hmm. It could be all four at the same time.
Yep.
But basically, you know, he took it upon himself in the first. I just realized that the cover image is also the same picture on page one. That's very cool. Yeah, he becomes a vigilante because a demon in his head tells him to. You know, he's killed a lot of people by this point. He's currently in a mental asylum, and there is a would-be detective, kind of reporter, who we met a while ago, and she got quite close to cracking the case, and now she takes another crack at it in this issue.
Mm. She is a detective. I don't think she's a reporter.
Is she? Oh, right. She's a detective. Okay, right. Man, just the fact that, like, we were able to catch up with this character again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just remembered everything about her because that first issue was so well written. Obviously, I didn't remember her profession.
Just the important things, though. You remembered who she was, vaguely.
Yep. She's a girl.
Yep.
She's not a vigilante.
Nice. As far as we know.
That'd be great if everyone was. The twist. Yeah. The biggest twist ever. Everyone has a demon in their head. But I just, I thought it was so great seeing our protagonist's world kind of intruded by her as she, you know, tries to figure out where he fits.
Yeah, into absolutely. It. And it's cool, like, every now and again, I feel like we get an issue that we don't actually see Dylan. And we hear his narration in this, and you see him in a photo for a minute, but we don't actually see where Dylan is up to at all in this issue. We see the copycat killer, mm-hmm. and we see all about this detective, and it's so cool. It's such a well-fleshed out sort of universe.
Especially because there's a big twist at the end that links another character mm-hmm. back to an earlier threat that we'd mm-hmm. forgotten about.
Yes.
And Dylan even reminds us that we'd forgotten about that threat in the narration, which is just like one of my favorite things about it. He's so cheeky.
Yep.
He's a cheeky, annoying, like almost Deadpool-ish kind of narrator.
But not that annoying.
No, but you know
not
what I mean?
Many
he breaks the fourth wall
kind
of, you know, and talks directly to you and, you know, reminds you that you've forgotten stuff.
And he's got that kind of unreliable narrator thing going on.
Yep.
Like he sort of, you don't really know whether you can trust him.
Totally.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I love this issue. I mean, as per fucking usual.
Yeah, and it always just looks great. It's... I can't believe there are people who don't read this.
Yeah, absolutely. They're idiots is
they
what they are.
Mm-hmm. I'll go on record.
Thank you so much. I also enjoyed the back matter, mm-hmm. like I do every time, but even the letter in which he talks about how much he loves Atlanta, the Donald Glover show, which I also love. That's cool. It's good finding out that someone you love likes something else you love.
Yeah, totally.
Vindication is
absolutely
what it is.
Absolutely.
So that was Kill or Be Killed, issue number 18, a series you should all be reading. Let's talk about issue 4 of Ice Cream Man.
Oh, man, I didn't get to this.
That's a bummer because it was an excellent issue.
Bummer.
This is a series written by W. Maxwell Prince with art by Martin Morazzo and colors by Chris O'Halloran, in which basically we are told these kind of short horror stories that are very quite real world, and the kind of thing linking them all together is that every character at some point in their story is visited by
spooky ice cream
this man. Evil ice cream truck driver who gives them an ice cream that represents something else that they really want in life. So it's been like drugs or like music and stuff like that in the past. And this issue revolved around a best friend, a man having to give the eulogy at his dead best friend's funeral.
Oh no, was it very sad?
That part of it, no. But he rekindles. Basically, he hangs out with his friend's father, mm-hmm. who left his friend and his friend's mother mm-hmm. At an early age, and our main character is considering doing the same.
Oh, okay.
But then the Ice Cream Man doesn't really figure directly into his story as much as we've seen in the past, but we are introduced to someone else. I guess like a rival to the Ice Cream Man, who is like a cowboy in black.
Great.
And now we get they're taking 2 months off and returning in July with something called Ballad of a Falling Man. So like the weird mythology around the Ice Cream Man is building.
I love it.
It's very, very cool and weird.
Absolutely.
Which is why I read this book.
Yeah. I love the variety of stories that we're getting from this book. You really, really never know what to expect.
Yeah. 100%. It's so good.
They're such a good team.
It's also a book about food, a very rare book about food that I do not crave. I don't want ice cream after this for a while. I'm good.
It's going to remind me about terrible things about myself, go on some kind of internal journey that I'm not ready for.
Now we move on to The Beef, issue number 3, written by Star Kings, Shane Lyne, Shaky Kane, and Ross Hell. It's a full creative team. This is about a man who is... He works on an abattoir, he kills all the cows, and then he eats all the cows at the hamburger shop that he works for. He reckons by this point he is more cow than he is human, and that's exactly what happens to him when he starts manifesting these bizarre beef powers.
Turns into a scary beef man. Yeah. Man made of beef.
Man made of beef. He also at one point starts growing, like he has multiple nipples, like udders on his body. So it is like this kind of like goofy Americana body horror book.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, I fucking love this.
Yeah, this is awesome.
This is incredibly for me. And this is another book, I think, that is actively making a point, but is having a good time with it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because it's definitely all about, like, the cattle industry and the dairy industry and...
And the American jobs industry. And, yeah. Yeah.
Racism.
The jobs industry, you know.
You're very political.
Very. Only when I'm hungover.
I think sometimes the colors on this look slightly bad.
They're extremely flat, yeah.
I don't mind the flats. It's more just like sometimes I think that the colors look a little bit discordant and it just could be a bit nicer. But I really do love this.
Yeah, I think the work that the Allreds do is the kind of biggest comparison. Yes. I think Laura Allred has a good match of like, you know, like... I don't know. Maybe it's just the actual shades of colors that she chooses.
Exactly it.
Like they're still very flat colors, but I think it works better than this. This is very simple.
Yeah, like I sort of like whoever's doing. I can't remember whoever's doing the colors for the Gilbert Hernandez, Assassinistas.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
I would like to see them recolor this. But I feel like that's me being massively nitpicky because I really love this book. I think it's clever and funny and weird and...
So weird.
Like sort of referential of superhero comics and silly and I love it.
And it's so gross as well. There's some disgusting. Really grotesque bullshit that happens in these pages.
Yeah.
A great series.
Absolutely.
Poor cows.
Makes me feel sad.
Do you think I said pork owls?
I wasn't sure what you said.
You're like, pigs are fine, Levins. It's cows. tell me about Sacred Creatures.
Yes, please.
Book I stopped reading after 2 issues for some silly reason. I regret that.
I don't know why. I really like this book. It comes out really infrequently. I'm not sure how.
It's because all the pages are like 60 issues long, right?
Yeah, it is a massive book, and it has. So it's written by Pablo Raimondi and Klaus Janson, letters by Clem Robbins, and then the contemporary scenes have art by. Pablo Raimondi with colors by Chris Chukri and Brian Reber, and then there's also scenes set in the ancient past, which are illustrated by Klaus Janson with colors by Dean White. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Janson was doing art on this too. That's great.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't realize that either until I read the pages then, which is very, very cool. And so this follows people called the Navil, who are like humanoid representations of the 7 deadly sins, and they have killed, what they call the Nephilim, sorry, Navil was the one that they killed, and they've killed the woman who
are
sort
they
of
Irish?
Kept them, I mean, not explicitly, and they've killed the sort of angel who kept them in check on Earth. And so now some horrible shit is going down, and this poor dude and his baby have been caught up in it, and sad stuff is happening to him. But it's really compelling, and like really, they've obviously been working on this story for a really, really long time. So the story is very rich and like well considered.
I reckon they've been working on the art for a really long time too, because like Janson is like, you know, one of those, you know, older DC mainstays who kind of, you know, works with your Frank Millers and Jim Lees all the time, who are artists that are, you know, always delayed on art. But I feel like this has just been coming, you know, obviously I think it's like a once every two months schedule, but yeah.
But it's well worth the wait. If you like Neil Gaiman-y stuff, if you like sort of American Gods,
definitely
check this out. I think it's like really clever and really fun and very emotional, and it's just a really, really good fun ride.
Awesome.
Love it.
Pass it over.
Absolutely.
Sacred Creatures. Go check it out. So I read Savage Dragon 233 this week.
That is quite a cover.
Can you describe
good
it? We haven't had...
Lord.
You've been cheated out of describing, you know, kind of... Horny covers. So describe this cover for us.
So this has
Savage Dragon Jr.
Savage Dragon Jr. and his wife, girlfriend. She is sitting on his shoulder wearing a singlet that says "Bald is beautiful." He has shaving foam over his face, and she has shaving foam over her vagina, and she is holding a razor.
Yep.
So. Yep.
Yeah. So this book has become
what is going on, Eric Larson?
This book has become very lewd. It's mostly their relationship.
I'm into that. I'm fine with that.
But that means that she falls pregnant all the time, and when you fall pregnant to an enormous alien dragon creature, you don't know which powers your children may display.
Okay.
And so this book sees her get shocked from whatever's inside of her.
Okay.
Is hospitalized.
What's that got to do with her fucking pubes?
I think this is just him doing a funny cover. It's very telling of the kind of humor that Eric Larson displays in his book. So their relationship, even though it does delve into him just drawing, you know, yucky sex stuff often, it is actually pretty sweet. It's like they've moved to Canada. They have three like nightmarish kind of like dragon toddlers who were just like fighting all the time.
Great.
And then to pay for everything, they've allowed a reality TV show to be made about them. And her mother has started a relationship and is now pregnant to like another alien who doesn't have any skin on his face.
Oh God.
That element is really fun. But then there's like, at the same time, we have this like interdimensional stuff that happened after issue 225, I guess, mm-hmm. Where there are three female heroes that are stuck in another dimension with another Savage Dragon character.
Okay.
And it's very serious sci-fi kind of stuff and really takes you out of it. I don't like that part of it at all. I understand that it is part of what makes Savage Dragon so expansive and fun, but that part of it just feels like a throwback to a comics that I never wanted to read in the first place. And something happens at the end of this issue to the wife of the younger Savage Dragon. And if they follow through with this, I'm going to stop reading this because...
Oh, hectic.
Yeah, she goes into childbirth and...
Oh, no. No good.
And she's pronounced dead at the end of this issue.
That's no good.
So I'm hoping there'll be some kind of twist.
Yeah.
They damn well better be, because she, in spite of her being like, you know, an excuse for Larson to draw like and write of a very, very horny female character, she is actually a really fun character anyway.
Yeah.
And kind of who I like the most in this book. So if they kill her, I'm out.
And look, I have no problem with showing that like a couple have a healthy sex life in a weird comic. I don't know if
healthy is the right present word, but yeah, sure.
Look, they have three children. All power to them.
Yep, 100%. So final image book we're talking about this week is Saga chapter 51.
Boo, classic Brian K. Vaughan.
What do you mean?
Not boo, just sad.
Oh, sad. Yeah, right. Brian K. Vaughan, writing this one with Fiona Staples, with the, you know, the imminent, why are those two on the cover? I hope nothing bad happens to those two in this issue.
No.
No spoilers, obviously. No spoilers. And a lot of people read this on trade.
But if you've seen the cover, you might figure it out.
Yeah, I think that's vague enough. But this sees, like, you know, that they are our family, our main family, and their friends are kind of living a semi-normal life, hiding away from everybody. But, of course, characters eventually do catch up with them. And we've seen characters trying to find them over the last few issues, and it finally happens in this one. And something sad happens for some characters, but something cool happens for another character because of that sad thing. So the cycle continues. We're going to see another unlikely allegiance happen in the next few issues, which is very fun. I hate being vague.
I know. I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Very soon, I think we should do a Saga spoiler cast.
Yeah, absolutely.
At length about Saga.
I'd have to go back and read Saga from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's so easy to
Wouldn't take you very long.
No.
Like, I got an hour or two, like, because you can, like, they're such, I pore over them when I read them for the first time, but I feel like rereading it, I'd just be like,
burn
through it. It's very, very
good page turning.
Yeah.
Hardcovers.
With the breastfeeding picture on that. I think it's such a great choice of cover image. So good.
I love it so much.
Another great issue of Saga.
Always a great issue of Saga.
Of course.
And, like, I know it's, I feel like I say it every time, but good Lord, Fiona Staples' character design is just my favorite thing ever. That new character in the like pantaloons with the weird mole face is just my favorite thing.
Especially
when
they wear their mask, which is that big like kind of weird cone thing. So fucking menacing,
so
and weird.
Great.
Yeah. But also such a kind of like dandy-ish kind of figure as well.
Yep.
Minstrelly.
Yep.
Yeah. Love it. Real good. So those are our image reviews for the week. Now we move over to Marvel. And
it's a big Marvel week.
Massive Marvel week. And I read all the really good ones first. And I was like, holy moly, what a week for Marvel. And then there were some ones I was like, oh, wait, they still put out some books that sucked.
Yeah.
But one issue that absolutely did not suck, and I'm sure everyone will agree with me, is The Mighty Thor, issue number 706, which is the finale to Jane Foster's saga. She became Thor about 3-ish years ago, when the Odinson Thor was, the Thor we know and love and see in the movies, was proclaimed not worthy, and the hammer passed on to someone new. This is spoilers for things that happened a long time ago, and shut up, Wayne.
Shut up, Wayne. Forever.
But, however, we are going to talk.
Can we talk about this issue. About the spoilery?
Yeah, so there will be spoilers for the next couple of minutes.
So just go la, 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 la.
Yeah, exactly.
No one here.
But in this, we knew that this is going to be the, this is called like the death of the Mighty Thor, right? This arc, yeah. And that is indeed what happened at the final issue, the last issue, 705. And this issue opens with Jane Foster lying dead on the moon in a hospital gown.
Yep.
With all of the Asgardians, what's left of them after they got torn apart by the Mangog, who she then killed. They're kind of standing above her, and we see her go to the gates of Valhalla. And who should she meet there but Odin, who finally realizes who she is, that she was Jane Foster this whole time. And we finally get this brilliant moment of redemption for Odin.
Yeah.
Who not only, like, you know, makes peace with the fact that that's who has been this new Thor that he didn't know about for all these years, but
he finally accepts her.
Just as she's, you know, going to go into Valhalla, and she starts regretting. She's like, "No, I'm ready to stop being Thor, but I'm not ready to die." Is kind of what she says. And wouldn't you know it, the Odinson is on the moon, channeling the powers of the storm within Mjolnir, and trying to revive her. And it takes Odin coming back to be with his son to revive Jane Foster. And when she is revived, she's not Thor anymore. She is still the cancer-ridden Jane Foster. She has been given her life back, but she still has to fight the cancer. How do you feel about this as an ending to her chapter?
To be honest, and maybe this is just because I read this monthly, and maybe in trade it'll be different, but I really felt like this dragged.
Right.
Just the, like, we all knew it was the death of the Mighty Thor, and the fact that it was called the death of the Mighty Thor immediately indicated that Jane wasn't going anywhere. So I felt kind of, I just kind of wish that they'd killed her and it had been more glorious.
My problem with that is that, like, in comics, characters stay dead for
five minutes. Yeah,
yeah.
But she's a normal human.
Yeah, you know, but I feel like, as soon as a new writer came on, as if you wouldn't want to return to this well.
Yeah.
And I think I grew quite attached to this character. I think Jason Aaron, she's probably one of his best written characters of all time.
Yeah. I mean, I prefer her when she's Thor to when she's Jane Foster. She's wearing a straight out of chemo t-shirt. That made me like, shut up. Sorry.
I mean, I would wear one.
Yeah, absolutely. Just normally.
Just, yeah.
Just perfectly healthy.
I mean, that was cheeky. That's fun.
Yeah,
that's
it's fine.
A t-shirt is what makes you like Thor more. It's classic Shinbo.
No, but I found, like, Jane Foster as Jane Foster was just kind of, I don't know what.
Okay, before you continue, keep in mind she has life-threatening cancer.
Just get the fuck out of bed already.
She did. Every time she picked up the hammer, undoing months of chemo.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even
I don't know
she's still
what my
got a t-shirt
is.
Commemorating all the
I'm
chemo
mad.
That she undid.
I'm mad
undid.
About everything. I just thought...
On my deathbed.
In costume, I thought that she was cool as hell. Out of costume, I was like, yeah, whatever, Jane. Whatever.
I think this still has weight to it. Like, she's going to be fighting cancer.
Yeah.
Now, I think if she was returned, like, she and didn't have cancer anymore.
Okay.
Like, even though it's kind of not fair that she still has cancer, but I feel like, you know, there is still a weight to all the things that happened that got us to this point. And I think it is a great way that for Jason Aaron to be able to bring it to an end this chapter while still not, you know, he didn't just cut it off. It wasn't just like, that's the end. It kind of makes sense that she literally passes what's left of the hammer back to Odinson so he can be Thor again. I liked that.
Yeah, for sure. Look, for sure, this is like a great story across, like, Jason Aaron has done an incredible thing with this story. I just think this, like, death of Thor dragged a little bit. And, like, are we just going to see her occasionally, like, whoops, still fighting cancer? Like, is she... What if... I reckon they should just still kill her. I reckon she should still just die of cancer.
Well, you're a monster.
That's what I do.
You are the Mangog herself.
But, man, I am going to miss Russell Dauterman.
Yeah, but I mean...
I'm excited about Mike Dormundo, but I love Russell Dauterman so much. I think that he really fucking nailed...
And it's not just Dormundo. It's someone else that we really like, I remember. He's doing, like, the flashback scenes.
Oh, cool.
The old Thor.
Oh, yeah. I love...
We'll know. We'll know in July. I can't remember who it is, but Will Moss, the editor, has been showing off the pencils, and God, they look fucking great.
I'm excited.
Yeah. I think this is a glorious run to a glorious end to one of my favorite runs of all time. We get a little tribute to Jane Foster as Thor in an annual of sorts coming in May called Mighty Thor at the Gates of Valhalla with different creators. Oh, no, it's just Jason Aaron, Jen Bartel, and Ramon Perez.
Great.
That'd be fun.
Oh, I love that.
One shot. Yeah. And then, in July, Jason Aaron and Mike Dormundo continue the stories of the Odinson.
Nice. Will Jason Aaron ever leave Thor?
I mean, hopefully not.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's really good at it.
Yeah.
And we're going to get him on Avengers this week, too.
Yeah. I'm genuinely excited about that.
Well, speaking about Avengers, and no more spoilers for Thor right now. I'll make sure I'll add these tags into the description. Which is pointless information for me to tell you now because you would have seen it already if it mattered to you. Just anyway, you're welcome, okay? Avengers issue number 690 came out this week, the final part of No Surrender, this 16-week-long event in which we got a weekly issue of Avengers that had basically the Grandmaster and the Challenger playing a game using Earth as the kind of chessboard and sending different teams of cosmic... villains to battle on Earth. It's a familiar scenario that saw a pretty diverse and weird team of Avengers. Like, the best known member of the Avengers team is Cap, but then like elsewhere, like you had Jane Foster on there as Thor and Human Torch and Falcon, Rogue, Beast, Wasp, Wonder Man, the other Wasp, Roberto Da Costa, who is now known as Citizen V.
Good Lord.
Hercules, Hawkeye, Bruce Banner. He comes back as Thor. Lightning, Red Wolf.
Bruce Banner comes back as Thor?
Sorry, that's Hulk. Iron Patriot, Dr. Voodoo, Synapse, and Scarlet Witch. Pretty crazy, weird lineup of all these books that were... All the Avengers books kind of being mashed together for this event. This is the kind of, you know, the requiem, the epilogue after they beat the Grandmaster and the Challenger last week that kind of sets up what all of the Avengers are going to be doing now. And because there haven't been any other announcements for the Avengers besides the actual Avengers book, which only features from all of those heroes that I just mentioned, Cap is the only member that's carrying on to Jason Aaron's Avengers run.
We've got to assume everyone else dies, right?
It just kind of sets up what they're going to do next, but I guess it's just, you know, it's one of those instances of them being like, well, now I'm going to go do that. And then, like, we just have to assume that that's what's being done. I mean, obviously, we'll catch up with some of them in their own books, but yeah, these teams are all kind of going their separate ways. Red Wolf and Lightning have gone... back to the south to like kind of continue that really fun what was it called Occupy Avengers team thing together, which I thought was nice.
To see more of that.
We're going to get a fun book about where Quicksilver is now because he ran faster than he ever went before and lost himself to I guess whatever the Marvel equivalent of the Speed Force is.
Oh,
so Saladin Ahmed is doing that with Eric Nguyen and Rico Renzi, which is cool. The Avengers book coming out, written by Jason Aaron with art by Ed McGuinness, is Thor, Captain Marvel, Captain America, Black Panther, Iron Man, Ghost Rider, Doctor Strange, and She-Hulk. A pretty awesome team.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
So that's coming out this week, so we'll be reviewing that on the next episode. But yeah, I really enjoyed this Avengers No Surrender event. I would recommend it as just a very fun kind of like Saturday afternoon burn through.
Could you read it if you're...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Not like a sort of, if you're not super up on current Marvel continuity, could you just read it as a standalone Avengers book, do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. Because I've gone back and read, like, you know, Kurt Busiek kind of, you know, parts of his run.
Yeah.
And, you know, all Marvel events, Marvel comics are always mired in whatever else has happened. Like, you know, characters are like, why does he not have an arm? Like, that always, and you get moments, you'll only have moments of that. You'll just be like, oh, why does this character, why is Thor a woman?
Yeah.
You know, why is, you know, all these kind of things like that. Yeah. But I think it definitely stands alone as its own very familiar kind of fun take on a massive Avengers team doing a big, massive Avengers thing.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah. Fun event.
Nice.
What should we talk about next, Siobhan?
Talk about Despicable Deadpool, issue 299.
We're almost at the 300th issue, which is going to be Jerry Duggan's farewell to this book that he's served on for quite some time now.
How long has he actually been on this book?
A while.
Like, well, like 5 years, 10 years.
I guess
since the dawn of time.
Since All New All Different started, whenever that was. Was that like 6 years ago, something like that?
I don't know.
So whenever, actually it was at the same time Jason Aaron started on Thor, when he did Thor God of Thunder. They both came out like the same month.
Yeah, right. So well, it's been a long fucking run.
Yeah. Basically, Deadpool has put out a hit on himself. He's, you know, in the hope that... Well, does he want to die? I can't remember.
That's what I would assume, but then he's trying to stop everyone killing him, so I'm confused as to his motivations. But I like it.
Mm. But yeah, this we see both Hawkeyes try and take him down. And we see Cap revive a character that we thought dead from this run.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like that character, Cap, and then a returning character of Scott Adsit, who is named and drawn to look just like Jerry Duggan's comedy friend, Scott Adsit, mm-hmm. the guy who was in 30 Rock and other things.
Mm-hmm.
He's been like serving as a Nova Corps member and is now returning to Earth to stop Deadpool as well. So that's going to be the big kind of finale on this. Really fun.
Great. I like I still slightly in shock that I am reading Deadpool.
And enjoying it as much as you are.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. Jerry Duggan with art by Mike Hawthorne, Terry Pallett, and Jordi Belair. It's a great looking book too. Real fun
Absolutely.
Stuff. So 300 issue very, very soon. All New Wolverine is also another book ending soon. Written by Tom Taylor. This dive into the future called Old Woman Laura. Was with art by Ramon Rosanas and colors by Nolan Woodard. Sees the team basically like Kamala Khan is now president, and X-23, aka Wolverine for the last few years, has learned that she is about to die.
Mm-hmm.
But before she dies, she's going to kill Doctor Doom.
She's going to take down the last bad guy because they now live in a crazy female-led utopia, and I am into it.
Yeah, and this the team up is like Captain Marvel, Gabby, Hawkeye, Maria Hill. I really enjoy Maria Hill in this.
Yes,
and we even get a Wasp cameo.
Yeah, there is it's very exciting to see like a female team.
I totally agree.
Like called like sisters. Or something.
I mean, to be fair, they were called A-Force. That wasn't that bad. It wasn't called, like, V-Force or something. Actually, you would probably want that.
I would love that. That's way better. Yeah, like, but just the variety of female like variety of looks on display here. Like Maria Hill is old with a buzz cut and her face is covered in scars.
Laura's fucked up too.
Like, Laura's fucked up too. I'm super into it.
Hawkeye's still beautiful. That's kind of it.
Still beautiful. She's and,
like,
the best.
Captain Marvel has like white hair and yeah.
Women are allowed to be old.
And I love it where even Wasp has this like weird new costume because she's stuck in her small form.
Yep.
And they break into Latveria and all of their non-Latverian tech is, you can't use it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. And there are actual stakes within this story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the final issue of both this arc and maybe Tom Taylor's run is around the corner. This is a astoundingly good issue of what's been a very fun run too.
Absolutely. I'm real excited to get to gush about how great this run has been to Tom in person on Saturday.
Yep, me too. And get him to sign some things.
I always get so awkward around creators that I really like.
Especially because you're paying them to be there. Yeah. Actually, you're more than welcome. You're entitled to...
treat them however the fuck I want.
You can get both boobs signed, Siobhan.
Just make everyone really uncomfortable.
Like, skip the line. Excuse me.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I would like you to sign my boobs.
Nicola, draw Wonder Woman on this one.
Yes, please.
So we got issue 599 of The Invincible Iron Man, written by Brian Michael Bendis. Is
Tony Stark back yet?
Yes, with art by Stefano Caselli and Alex Maleev. And I just want to quickly point out that I really think that the way Bendis writes Dr. Doom, who is now trying to be good,
mm-hmm.
And we know that in the future, in Old Woman Laura, he stops being good at some point.
Mm.
But he writes Dr. Doom as... what's his name? Victor Von Doom,
mm-hmm.
as quite quiet and introspective,
mm-hmm.
and thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
And Bendis is incapable of writing any other character like that.
Yeah.
And I realize that's why I liked Infamous Iron Man so much, is because he writes. He's
because like, he doesn't have like massive monologues every second page.
Exactly.
That are just like, hey, you know what I was thinking? I was like, blah, 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 blah. That's how I would define Bendis's writing.
But yeah, Tony Stark is back and the first person he goes to see is his mother. And
Green Arrow, it looks like.
No, Leonardo da Vinci is in this.
Oh.
Well, I don't know why, but he is. There's a lot of bizarre things that happen in this. Returns of characters that I don't think should be in this, you know, final Bendis issue or whatever. He's already got more than enough weird characters that shouldn't be in an Iron Man book, like Mary Jane Watson, for example.
Yeah.
And Tony Stark's estranged mother.
I mean, it'd be weird if she was in any other book.
Tony Stark's estranged mother? Yeah. But I mean, like, just like, because she's not actually a Stark. Like, they gave
they
birth and then they, no, they gave, oh. that like, he, so the parents that,
oh.
this, they adopted him or whatever.
Right.
And she, Tony.
So this is his biological mother.
Yes. And we learn that she killed his biological father because they were spies agents or some shit. Like,
oh, yeah.
That shit is complicated. But meanwhile, you get the brilliant Alex Maleev drawn. Doom stuff is the highlight of this series for me at this point.
I love how many Marvel heroes have surprise spy parents. Spider-Man, Iron Man.
Oh, did you see the Amazing Spider-Man 2?
You know, I'm pretty sure I did.
With Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. And they
I remember shoot, quite liking it.
They shoot... Oh, really? I'll end this conversation. but they shoehorned in like the most bizarre... his parents being spies thing and like set up this like weird underground railroad that we never revisited.
Oh man, I don't remember any of that.
It was real strange. Bizarre movie. Speaking of strange, Siobhan, glad I used that choice of word.
Hey, that was good.
We can talk about the finale of Doctor Strange Damnation, issue number 4, written by Donnie Cates, Nick Spencer, with art by Rod Reyes and Simon Kudransky, while also talking about Doctor Strange, issue number 389, written by Donnie Cates, with art by Nico Henrichon. So the Damnation event ends in, all of the heroes who have become Ghost Riders getting their souls back because the original Ghost Rider becomes the King of Hell in that one shot that I'm glad I read, even though I didn't enjoy it, but at least it made sense when he suddenly shows up. I'm the King of Hell now. I kind of feel
like that about this whole series and like mini event. Like, it's annoying to me how many series it has gone across.
Yep.
So if you're just reading Doctor Strange, you're like, well, what the fuck is going on? And same thing if you're just buying the mini series. Like, I think that's dumb and bad. Do one or the other.
Yeah. How are you going to collect this and trade is what I want to know.
Yeah. And I feel like I could have just done without this whole thing.
Look, there were fun moments in it. I love Rod Reyes's and Nico Henrichon. I love them both as artists on this book.
Absolutely. But we all knew that, like, Las Vegas wasn't going to stay as hell. This didn't have any real stakes.
You can describe every comic we read as that.
That's very true. I guess it's more that I just didn't enjoy this that much.
No, totally.
I probably should have just not read it.
For me, though, it was always just a case of, like, being like, you know, like, oh, enjoying on face value what was happening in the Damnation book, just because it was, you know, a big, messy, fun, magic-y thing with lots of different characters. But then actually way more enjoying Donny Cates' regular Doctor Strange issues that tied into the event. And so we got the final one of those in 389 this week. It basically showed how Doctor Strange made a deal with Dormammu in Hell. Mm. And I really love the way Henry Sean draws Dormammu.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, I love all of his art on this. I thought it's really, really fun. It has a very indie-ish quality to it.
Yeah.
I don't like that this sets up that Doctor Strange is in love with
Zelma.
Is that Zelma?
But I'm very into the cover of the next issue.
That is a shockingly good cover.
Yeah.
Who did that? I don't even know.
That's Mike Del Mundo, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. Yep, it totally is. Maybe. I guess that's his signature.
Hmm.
Kind of looks like, ow. Signatures are weird. It features Doctor Strange, Selma, and Bats the dog hiding at the front door of Doctor Strange's house. You would expect them hiding from a horrible beast, but it's just Spider-Man.
I like it when Spider-Man is like mad annoying, and everyone's just like, definitely. Ah, this fucking guy.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm kind of glad this Damnation event is over too. It had potential, but it wasn't bad. It was just
felt really pointless and needless.
Totally. It should have just been in the Doctor Strange series. It did not need to be its own event.
Yes, agreed.
So now we have Exiles number 2, written by Saladin Ahmed, with art by Javier Rodriguez and inks by Alvaro Lopez, colors by Chris O'Halloran. This is the Blink Run team of different Marvel characters from different dimensions. Mm-hmm. And this saw them pretty much pull Tessa Thompson's Valkyrie from the world of the MCU, I guess.
But kind of only, like, her aesthetic. I don't feel like in this she kind of talks like Hercules, which I like. It's fun.
Totally.
Having, like, a big, bawdy, boozy, old-style hero is always cool. A cool addition to any team. But I don't feel... I feel like saying that that's exactly how she was in the Ragnarok movie is...
That's true. It's definitely her likeness, though.
Yes, absolutely. Looks the same, which is great.
Which is awesome. Javier Rodriguez draws a very good Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie. Mm-hmm. They then go into a world that I guess is kind of like Scotty Young's kind of baby versions of all the Marvel characters.
Little X-Men
world.
Or something.
Little X-Men. And so they get this...
Marvel Babies.
Marvel Babies kind of version of Wolverine called Wolvie, who is like this, you know, kind of cute, chibi, kind of stumpy little cartoon version of Wolverine.
And they have to stop Magneto stealing all the pies.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But then you have just very exposition heavy of why they're doing this and blah, 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 blah. I could do without that.
Yeah, but you know what? I still really like this team. And I think that now we've gotten that kind of exposition out of the way, this is going to be a really good fun.
And any book. Any chance to kind of... write and draw, sorry, just allow Javier Rodriguez to draw like just weird interdimensional wild shit is great. So.
And Blink looks so cool.
Mm. The next issue, the Exiles join forces with Marvel Puzzle Quest's hit character, Peggy Carter, the Captain America version of Peggy Carter.
Cool. Is that like a phone game?
Yes.
Mm. I feel good about that.
But she looks exactly like Hayley Atwell. So there you go.
Well, you know how much I love the movies influencing the comics. It's my favorite.
So much. Anyway, it's still fun.
Yeah, it's still fun. Still good. And I would follow Saladin Ahmed to the ends of the earth.
It kind of feels like when they did the Spider-Verse thing and you had like the Spider-Man who was in like the Hostess Pies commercial being brought to the comics.
Yeah.
And the Spider-Ham stuff, who we're going to talk about
Japanese
in a minute.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. I wonder how deep they're going to get into weird. Like, tying into like an app is pretty weird.
Yes, yeah, pretty bizarre.
And we've got, the MCU version, the kind of Scotty Young-esque little guys. Wonder what else we've got on the horizon. Maybe Blondie?
Yeah.
And the monkeys?
Where's the Ramones?
Moon Knight issue 194 was an unexpected highlight of my reading this week.
Yes, please.
Written by Max Bemis with fill-in artist Ty Templeton.
I don't know why
Kieran
you're surprised.
Smith.
Because this book has been consistently, like, just excellent.
This
one
was
of my
excellent
favorites.
In a way that it has not been yet, though.
Yeah.
In that we have a story, a Moon Knight story, without Moon Knight in it. But it still is an origin story of sorts. This is the story of how Mark Spector got his dissociative...
personality disorder.
That's right. I forgot what.
What was the thing that sort of shattered his mind?
Yeah, and
is that an appropriate thing to say?
I was kind of like, oh, here we go, and we get this very, very like historically well kind of researched. I guess. I mean, I'm not a New York Jewish person, so I don't know how true, but this felt very genuine. Basically, we see Mark as a young boy hanging out in synagogue and basically spending most of his time with older rabbis making Jewish jokes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling a closeness to one of them, closer to what he feels to his father. We learn that man has a horrible, horrible past involving, Nazi ties and sacrifices and pain and yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's the experience that leads to Mark Spector being the way he is. And he has never told anyone this story.
This felt like incredibly personal.
Yeah.
To me, like I don't know anything about Max Bemis.
I know, but he's like the singer in a pop punk band. Like that's what's so funny about this. Like,
yeah. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he was like Jewish and from New York, because it felt very, very like sort of real in a really horrible way. And also like the experience that Mark is having of becoming a father, that alongside that story is so like so, it's so good, man.
Yeah, it's so good. Great. And the way that it's kind of like it just that experience bookends this issue in a really, really great way that doesn't feel like shoehorned in. You're like, oh, this whole story exists so he can get over his fear of revealing who he really is to his daughter.
Yeah.
I love this issue. It was so great. Ty Templeton, yeah.
Nails it.
And in a way that I didn't think he would be capable of, because I'm mostly familiar with him as the Batman the Animated Series cartoon guy.
Mm.
There is like a very kind of old school feeling to his characters here, like as far as the way they're drawn, but the layout and panel structure is very modern and just really, really a joy to read.
Absolutely.
This was like one of my favorite issues this week.
Very like emotional, but excellent.
Totally. And you know, the moments that could have been heavy handed and like very fake feeling that feel very real and upsetting.
Absolutely. Max Bemis is on the list of pop punk singers turned comic book writers.
It's a long list.
He is miles ahead of Gerard Way.
Really enjoyed this.
But I think he's great. I think I'll read anything that he writes from this Moon Knight run.
Definitely. So from Moon Knight to Moon Girl.
Nice.
Now reunited with her best friend, Devil Dinosaur, for Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, issue number 30, in which the two of them team up with the Thing and the Human Torch to take out a Super Skrull and a, you know, galaxy affecting death ray or some bullshit.
Omnipotentus, yeah, yes. the sort of Lady Galactus who eats time.
The whole time reading this, which is this is the most Kirby, classic, cosmic Kirby I've seen in a comic ever, in the way that even the dialogue felt straight out of a Kirby written book.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just like, man, how the fuck would a kid read this?
You know, I think kids would do okay with it.
Okay.
I think it's okay.
Turns out
I think it's that hectic.
I'm dumber than most kids. No, but I mean like
I didn't say it.
You have very grounding moments with Moon Girl.
Yeah.
Which is the reason why you read this, I guess.
Absolutely.
But.
And the physical comedy of Devil Dinosaur being back is excellent. All of the Devil Dinosaur panels are so great. So classic.
Definitely.
I love Devil Dinosaur.
He's real good. He's a good boy.
He's a good boy.
Yeah, but I think I'm actually like, I thought this arc dragged a little bit, so
I would agree.
I'm happy. I think the sweet spot is like two issue arcs as opposed to five or six, which is what they've been doing lately.
Yeah.
But we get a one shot next written by by Amy Reeder. Is she coming back? Is that a one?
And it's an anti-smoking PSA. I love PSA comics.
Amazing. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm into it.
We got Lockjaw number 3. A book featuring the terrifying words, featuring Spider-Ham.
I can't tell if I love or hate Spider-Ham.
Yeah, I enjoyed him a lot in this issue. Written by Daniel Kibble-Smith with pencils by Carlos Villa, inks by Roberto Poggi, and colors by Chris O'Halloran. I've said his name about 4 times this episode. He's been a busy boy.
Doing a lot of colors then.
Good colors in this one too. This sees Lockjaw and D-Man teleported to a world of anthropomorphic animals, in which they come head-to-head with the Wrecking Zoo, which was pretty funny.
Pretty good fun.
I think this is like Spider-Ham. This is Spider-Ham's universe, and he's able to kind of do some of the legwork in explaining why all this weird shit has been happening to Lockjaw and D-Man, and why D-Man is kind of connected to Lockjaw.
Yeah. You know, I found really weirdly irritating the panels that are like D for whatever the whole way through. But I don't need that.
You know what D is for.
Seems massively unnecessary. I don't know what you think that adds to the story.
I couldn't even remember. Oh, right. I see what you mean. Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, no one knows what the D and D-Man stands for.
Yeah, but also no one cares.
Okay, right. Well, that's the point, I guess. They never really say what it is. I think there's one issue left of this left. Maybe.
I think this is not as much fun as it could be or should be.
But I think Spider-Ham definitely made it more fun.
Yeah. So, yeah. Having it set in like an anthropomorphized Marvel universe is way more enjoyable.
Hmm. Well done, Spider-Ham. Another win for Spider-Ham. Yep.
I want to know more about Smile Diver, though, who's a part of the Wrecking Zoo, who is a dolphin.
Yep.
Yes, please.
A smiling dolphin who can walk on, who has feet.
Mm.
Final Marvel book I read this week was Star Wars Darth Vader. Issue number 15, written by Charles Soule, with pencils by Giuseppe Camuncoli, doing incredible work on this. Danielle Orlandini on inks and David Curiel on colors. The bulk of this issue was Darth Vader like fighting in the water with like enormous like squid creatures and horrendous aliens. Like basically like him underwater, submerged, and using the Force and his lightsaber to kill everybody that he can find.
Great.
Fucking great. Just I love the Darth Vader as a force of nature is actually quite a compelling and fun comic book. And Charles Soule's doing probably my favorite book that he's writing at the moment on this right now.
Hmm.
Just a becoming Coley doing some great, not just great under the sea monsters, but also great space with ships and shit as well too. Real good. So now we go to DC now for our final little stretch. No, second final little stretch of reviews. Should we kick it off with issue 3 of The Terrifics from DC's New Age of Heroes? This is written by Jeff Lemire, and we do not have what's his name on art anymore. I can't remember what's his name was.
No, me neither.
Not Fabok.
Nope.
No, whatever.
I don't remember who it was either. I
can't even find the creative list. Who drew this issue?
Okay, it's yes, it was Ivan Reis. Now it's Joe Bennett.
Joe Bennett.
But with inks from Sandra Hope, Jamie Mendoza, and Art Tibbett, mm-hmm. and Marcelo Maiola on colors.
I don't like this series. And it's really weird to me that Lemire is the one writing it, because it does not feel like a Lemire written book at all. It's really goofy, and the team dynamic doesn't really work for me. And they keep making like real dumb references to Marvel. Like at one point,
yeah.
Metamorpho and Plastic Man team up to do a fastball special.
Hardball special. Whatever it is. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I think this is getting better. I think issue by issue, the team is coming together. I think he's finding his voice for the team. I think that now we're sort of getting a bit more of an idea of what they're doing in this book. I think it's a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as compelling, I think. Yes, I agree with you. It's not my favorite Jeff Lemire book.
I think Mr. Terrific is a dick. Like, I don't understand. I guess that ties into Mr. Fantastic being a dick, but I just don't. I don't really find anything to like about a character who I've loved in the past.
I like his jacket.
His jacket is great, but I don't. Yeah, they all hate each other, and it's just getting a bit trying because I think I'm starting to hate it too.
I'm gonna give this at least the first arc, and then see how I feel about it. Because this is definitely the issue that I enjoyed the most.
I'm going to give it two more artist changes because you know that's coming around the corner. I definitely thought Joe Bennett was more suited to the book than Ivan Reis was, especially with Plastic Man's weird shit that he gets to draw. He did that, handled that pretty well. So also from the New Age of Heroes from DC, we got issue 4 of The Silencer this week. This has been written by Dan Abnett with new artist, someone who we loved when he did New Superman, is it Ivor Bogdanovich?
Oh, I don't know.
Sorry, I'm trying to find. They love putting the credits page as the final page of the comic. Victor Bogdanovich. Who was the initial artist on the New Superman book that we really, really loved. And doing a great version that feels like, you know, pretty close to John Romita Jr. while still being his own style.
I was going to say it's very Greg Capullo.
Yes.
To me.
That too, yeah. Still with colors by Mike Spicer.
Has Mike Spicer done the colors for this consistently? Because I feel like there's a couple of weird variations of skin tone.
Oh, really? Maybe I might be wrong. Yeah, I guess throughout this, I definitely saw so, thought so. I still really enjoy this.
Yeah,
this series.
Good fun.
Basically, the Silencer is the name of a once was assassin who fought alongside Talia al Ghul in her same operation, and is now trying to get out of that. He's basically now being brought after getting out 5 years ago and starting her own family. Is now being brought back into that world. And this sees her, as you can see on the cover, go head-to-head both in the past and now in the present day with Deathstroke.
Yeah.
And it's cool seeing her just being able to hold her own against him.
Absolutely.
And I think he's a good addition to, like, this story.
I wish he was a bit more like the current sassy version of Deathstroke that we have in
Well, yeah, the main Deathstroke I think he series. May become sassy.
Thank
give him,
goodness.
Give him tie. Time.
Absolutely.
Give him a tie. Put Deathstroke
what happens
in
to
a
her?
Tie.
She doesn't have a funny little visor on the top of her costume, though, anymore. What happened to her little hat?
Maybe got blown off.
Silly.
maybe Bogdanovich is like, no, we're good for the visor.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate his little hat.
So yeah, this is far and away my favorite of the New Age of Heroes books so
Absolutely.
Far.
Absolutely. Really good fun.
There's still like four of them that haven't even seen the first issue
good
of yet.
Good lord. Without it.
We got the final issue of The Demon Hell is Earth this week, written by Andrew Constant, who again you'll be able to see at King's Comics Free Comic Book Day this weekend, with art by...
Brad Walker. Andrew Hennessy on inks. Chris Sotomayor on colors.
Mm-hmm. And this sees Etrigan, Jason Blood, Merlin, and...
Madame Xanadu.
Madame Xanadu team up to fight Etrigan's father in hell.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a spectacular finale that...
really good.
Like, I think this will read really well in trade because I think there are one or two issues that were quite slow and exposition heavy in the middle of this run that kind of slowed me down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But this it was such a strong ending.
Really was.
Just not just in terms of stories and plot points, but just in terms of him, you know, some of the action that Brad Walker drew, especially like, you know, just like, you know, fiery loppings of heads and like all that kind of fun stuff was a really, really fun issue to look at.
Absolutely. And like the new sort of status quo for Jason Blood and Etrigan and Madame Xanadu, I thought was really great.
Mm. Definitely agreed. Some fun rhyming in there too, as you would expect from an Etrigan book.
I hope Andrew Constant gets to do more stuff at DC because I think he's super talented.
Well, looks like he's set up a potential like... beginning for a sequel to this, first
and foremost. Or even like a Shadow Pact book.
Fun. So yeah, really, really fun series. The Demon Hell's Earth. Go check it out when this trade comes out very soon, I'm sure. Maybe even get this issue signed at King's Comics Free Comic Book Day.
That's a good idea.
This Saturday.
That's a very good idea.
We got the 979th issue of Batman Detective Comics this week, written by James Tynion IV, nearing the end of his run. With art on this, god damn it, where did you put the credits this time, DC? Like, they're not consistent.
Is it Eddie Barrows?
No, it's not. It's someone whose last name is Briones.
Oh, man.
Like, put it at the end. Sure, that's fine, but always do that. Here we go. It's like five pages in. Philippe Briones. And then colors by John Calise. And this sees Tim Drake, Red Robin, completely taken over by the Brother Eye software that has been pulled from the future by this bad guy, Ulysses, who is now known as the General, and he's using it to fight Batman and Batwoman and all of the Bat crew.
I am quite lost in this arc. I'm pretty done. I'm pretty ready for this like Batman Eternal arc to be over. I sort of really liked this villain and now I feel really lost and I don't care. And this issue took me like a million years to read.
It doesn't really make sense why he's doing what he's doing either. His motivations aren't clear.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like, I want Tim to be my best friend. I want him to be better or something. And I don't think he's achieving that.
Yeah. So we're nearly at the end of it. We'll talk about this arc when it's finished, I think.
Yeah.
So now we move over to Young Animal.
Oh, just quickly, I read issue 22 of Batgirl, Strange Loop Part 1, still written by Hope Larson, with pencils by Minkyu Jung and inks by Jose Marzan Jr., Matt Lopez on colors. This is the start of a brand new arc, and I think it's really good. I think that Hope Larson has developed really good voice for Babs. I think that she's kind of getting better at balancing that like techie sort of point that she's making throughout the whole thing, and making it less slightly cringy.
Yep.
And this is the only comic that I can think of where she consistently uses thought bubbles.
Right.
And I like that. That's bad.
Good fun. Yeah, actually, I enjoyed that. Pass it over. Over to Young Animal for the 11th and I guess final issue of Doom Patrol by Gerard Way, Nick Darrington, Tom Fowler, and Tamara Bonvillain.
Who are we getting next?
I think it's just it.
Oh.
Yeah, because they cancelled issue 12 from the schedule. And okay.
This is probably the issue that I liked the best.
You knew
I understood what the fuck was going on.
Well, this is basically like everything we've seen so far in this series kind of come to a head, and we see the origin story for this bad guy whose kind of image is just kind of white with the hell due to copyright stamp over it. And we learn that he was a character who had a toy line made of him, and there was a light bulb in the toy that gave basically put kids into comas.
Mm-hmm.
So he was completely
cancelled.
All his comics are cancelled, and now he's turned him evil. We see characters return that we haven't seen in a while. Lots of crazy things happen, all brilliantly drawn by Nick Darrington.
I'd love to see what else Nick Darrington does after this.
Yeah, I wonder why. I wonder if the delay is because of Gerard Way or because of Darrington, because his art's very detailed.
Yeah.
But either way, this was a kind of a mess of a series in terms of publication.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a strong ending if this is the final issue.
Absolutely.
Just ignore the Doom Patrol, Justice League of America, Milk Wars tie-in stuff.
Yes, agreed.
Weirdly, I think they've collected issues 1 to 5 and issues. Issues 1 to 5 and issues 6 to 10 mm-hmm. in two trades already. Now it's just one issue that's left off that. I might be wrong.
Mm.
But that's funny. That's a bit of a predicament for him. Anyway, Young Animal this week also put out Mother Panic, Gotham AD, issue 2, written by Jody Hauser, with art by, I always forget what Mustafa's first name is. Ibrahim Mustafa, with colors by Jordan Boyd. Look, we regularly get to review kind of Elseworld-esque stories that, are people celebrating different versions of Batman and all the Bat mm-hmm. characters, most recently in Batman White Knight,
mm-hmm.
Which is good or bad, depending on which of us you ask. But
it's good.
I really just showed my cards for me. this, I thought, is a very subtle kind of reworking of the Bat characters, but
it's just set in the future, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like it.
So we have Mother Panic go ask Catwoman for help
mm-hmm.
In trying to save her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And Catwoman lives alone with a non-human version of Poison Ivy who's given herself to the plant world.
I like that. I like that version of Poison Ivy who's like, you know what? I'm done being a sexy lady. I'm just all plants now.
Yeah, totally.
I'm just plants.
She's a sexy plant because she puts two red leaves near her face leaf and mm-hmm. that looks like lipstick. Sexy lipstick.
Sexy. It's a sexy plant.
Well, fuck that plant.
Man, I was thinking, I was like, I'm going to say that, and then I decided against it. Good job.
Worse than you in every way. I just realized Doom Patrol Volume 2 comes out in May, so I guess that will collect all
of
it. We're fine. Predicament over. In this world, the Joker has killed everybody.
Mm.
And it's just now this kind of hopeless, sad man, just bored. So I guess
he misses Batman so much.
But we know Batman exists in this world. But I guess, maybe not in this, in Gotham AD. I don't know.
He went away or something.
Who knows?
He's gone.
It's fun. It's vague.
There's a backup that's the Joker riding into an agony aunt talking about how much he misses Batman.
The highlight of this issue for me, and maybe one of the best things I read this week.
Yep.
That was great. Real fun alternate history of DC Universe stuff.
Absolutely. And I think it's always good fun with these stories when you have a future version and you're like, oh, well, who the fuck is that? So in this, we've got a little new Catwoman who's her sidekick or something, but we don't know who that is.
Mm.
And I'm into it.
Yeah. In told through flashbacks, Joker kills not only all the heroes, but also the other villains. And mm-hmm. it just straight up rips Two-Face in half.
Yeah. It's good.
Real gnarly shit.
Good way to kill Two-Face.
So there was a Vertigo book this week.
Yep.
I didn't read it.
Okay, I read Motherlands, issue 4, written by one of my favorite contemporary writers, Cy Spurrier, with art by Rachel Stott and Pete Woods, colors by Philippe Sobrero. And this is the future bounty hunter, mother and daughter, reality show, comedy drama about hunting down their estranged brother / dad / husband.
Pretty relatable stuff.
Yeah, it's very relatable. Look, the core thing is about mother-daughter relationships, and if that's not relatable, I don't know what is.
Does the mother have a face hugger alien on the first page of on her face in the first in this
yes.
Great questions.
Great answers. Anyway, I think the series is excellent. I think the art's great. I think it has a really excellent blend of like comedy and high stakes and sort of crazy sci-fi action and boobs and sex jokes and drinking and
weird future wacky shit.
I like it a lot. I think Siceberry is very imaginative.
Cool. Those are our DC reviews. Now the only thing left for us to talk about is all the books that were published by others this week.
I only read a couple. I read three.
I got lots. But let's talk about Boom first, because Boom put out quite a few books, including Abbott, issue number 4, written by Saladin Ahmed and Sammy Cavella and Jason Wordy on art. This is the book about a aspiring detective in Detroit.
She's a journalist.
Well, I know, but she's an aspiring detective. She's like an investigative
she's
journalist.
She's an investigative journalist who covers the stories that the sort of white media don't cover.
Because also, she herself is a black woman, and is it the 70s?
Mm-hmm.
In Detroit. So you can imagine it's not very easy for her to fucking live, let alone try and be an investigative journalist.
Absolutely. Especially as she appears to be bisexual and in an on again, off again relationship with a woman who runs a crime family.
Mm-hmm. And her ex-husband is a policeman.
Yes.
And she's also haunted by a weird supernatural being that
killed
sends
her first husband?
Yeah.
I love this.
Yeah, it's real good. I think that this is what I was talking about, though, with as she's trying to solve this mystery that mm-hmm. she's in the middle of. I fucking wish this was narrated by her. I think
true,
that would be
a really great way
to grow what, because we just, like, you know, like we said, we know everything about this character, but not so much. There are moments where I wish they allowed the personality to shine through instead of her having like kind of angry conversations with people that she doesn't like constantly.
True. I think that what we do get to see of her personality is quite visual, and about her sort of habits and her tics and things like that. Like, she's kind of like, I was gonna be like, she's kind of like Monk. She's not like Monk, but she, you know, has specific.
Monk is such a weird show to reference in 2018.
I know.
Did you watch all of Monk?
No, but I watched a lot of Monk.
You watched enough Monk.
Enough Monk to still be thinking about it. Anyway, I think this is great.
Yeah, for me, when I heard about this series, like, yeah, I was already very on board the Saladin Ahmed train, but was very excited to see Sammy Cavella, who we'd seen on a Black Mask book.
Yep.
I was excited to see Sammy do work with a bit more of a structured writer mm-hmm, than what mm-hmm. she was working at the time. There are some incredible layouts on this. My favorite
Absolutely.
Page that I want to shout out is one of the, I think it's Abbott having a discussion with her ex-husband, the cop, mm-hmm. And the background is like a kind of like collection of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the panels are kind of spread out across the evidence like Polaroids on mm-hmm. the evidence mm-hmm. table. Oh, that was a really inspired way to have that scene play out.
I love the first page where we sort of see our lead character, Abbott, sort of depressed, smoking in a chair, drunk, and the top of the page is like the cigarette smoke, but we see the music that she's listening to and what she's thinking about and the sort of details of her depression, and so much is communicated in that one page, which I think is really impressive.
Definitely. Yeah.
And
really, really good.
Gorgeous.
Super good. This issue was called Makes Me Wanna Holler too.
Mm.
Good name for an issue.
Exceptional.
And I would know because I name the best podcast in the game.
Is it Hey Fam?
No. I mean, like, as far as, like, episodes.
Oh,
I feel
yeah.
like serious issues, no one can touch us.
Absolutely. I agree.
Grass Kings, issue number 14, came out through Boom Studios this week.
Balls.
Written by Matt Kent, Tyler Jenkins, and Hillary Jenkins on art. The Grass Kingdom, which is an off the grid kind of shut off from society, mm-hmm. A group of once were Americans living on their own now, is getting invaded by the neighboring town's police force, and they're bringing the army. It's getting more and more serious.
Yes.
And at the heart of it is they're trying to work out who the thin air killer is. Mm-hmm. So again, this is another one with this actually does have some narration in it, but this is a pretty messy issue in terms of structure.
Yeah. I feel like this arc hasn't been everything that I wanted it to be.
Well, yeah, this is my least favorite of all the Matt Kent comics that I'm reading at the moment.
Mm.
I think it'll come good again. I think it is telling a lot of exposition from a lot of different points of view at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is a difficult thing to portray in comics. Sometimes it's easier just to kind of let us presume that that's what that person thinks, or have them say it outright in way less text than what you would have to have them discover it naturally through conversation.
Yeah.
It's difficult. But it's still a beautiful looking book with great art by Tyler and Hilary Jenkins. Is that all for the Boom books this week? I think it may be for me.
Nice.
What else have you got on your pile?
The Wilds issue 2 from Black Mask Vita Ayala and Emily Pearson. So this is colors by Marissa Louise. Ooh, all female team except for the letters by
Makes
Jim Campbell.
Sure you shout out the colors because this is an incredibly well colored book. Great. Yeah. Just the art's the why I'm going to keep reading this book.
Absolutely.
I think the story has flashes of utter brilliance, but is just trying to do a bit too much issue to issue, and I'm not following all the characters.
Yeah, you know what? This very much reads to me as this creative team's first go at something, and I think that, like, even the art looks slightly unfinished, and I really look forward to seeing where all of these people are in like a year and see what their work is like now. I still think this is like a great story and compelling and interesting and gorgeously colored.
This is the kind of like a dystopian future where plants. Oh, it's M. Night Shyamalan. It's the happening all over again.
It's the happening all over again.
But these are basically like the plants kind of take over humans and they become zombies.
Yeah, it's very what's that video game? The Last of Us.
Yes.
Yeah, that kind of vibe. Even down to the fact that it's like spores. Oh no, wait, but that was the other comic. Fuck.
And our hero is like a runner who goes from community to community trading goods and information.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. I think the politics of the world, I would have liked to have seen more of just what it's like to live in this world before we got as deep in the politics as we're getting in the second issue. But I think if we stick it out, it'll you know, with this already out there, it'll be a bit more fun and readable. Yeah. So let's talk about Vault Comics this week. Did you read the second issue of Songs for the Dead?
No, intentionally. I didn't love the first issue enough, I don't think.
Yeah, well, this was about the Necromancer.
Yeah.
And I found myself like thinking about that book and going, did they ever make a second issue of it? And then sure enough, it was this week that it came out. And then, yeah, I
decided against it.
It's a great looking book written by Andrea Fort and Michael Christopher Herron with illustrations by Sam Beck. Probably my favorite thing about the book is the art. Does very great fantasy kind of, but like lots of emotive faces cartooning. I think, again, another story that, like, you know, being a necromancer is fucking awesome. I think the first issue did a great job of kind of her kind of realizing what her powers are and how the world is going to view her. And then we just kind of plunged into way more world-building stuff. And I think it would have been more fun to have it with her doing more necromancy shit.
Yeah. Build the world as the adventure goes on.
Exactly. Yeah. So I won't be continuing with that one. Strangers in Paradise this week.
Yes, please.
This is the third issue of the new edition, I guess, of Strangers in Paradise, written and drawn by Terry Moore, returning to this beloved story. You can hear our review of... I recently read all of it, and we talked about it in a recent Patreon episode, which you can find at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast for just a couple bucks. Listen to us talk about even more comics than we do every week. Strangers in Paradise, issue number 3. This has... taken a turn that I did not expect. I thought we would catch up with, I was going to call her Hopi, but that's
Kachu.
Kachu and the other one,
Francine.
Thank you so much, Siobhan.
I haven't even finished the series.
My hangover is really just kicking in the fourth gear.
I know, you seem like you're really struggling. You okay?
Do cars even have four gears? Strangers in Paradise. I thought we were going to see a lot more of their relationship because we've jumped quite forward and we kind of caught up with them in real time. They have babies and they live with each other and
so beautiful.
Instead, we're really plunging into, like, you know, the mystery, action, spy, thriller side of the Parker Girls saga, which I thought was kind of done and dusted. I kind of would have liked. I mean, obviously, it's always going to be a part of Kachu's life and Francine's because of their involvement, but. I'm enjoying this, but I kind of, this is not what I wanted in a return to the series.
I am enjoying this and I haven't even finished it. But I think this is great fun. And I think that we're getting little flashes of their life together, which is really beautiful.
Yeah. What I love about Terry Moore's writing, especially on Strangers in Paradise, cause you know, he's got the captive audience already. He doesn't really care.
Yeah.
He'll just end. Like, this issue just kind of ends with Kachu trying to escape where she is and then suddenly not being able to because a bunch of cows are crossing the road.
Yeah, and that's
and
the
so
end.
So it ends on her getting out of a car and looking at the cows, and that's the end of the issue.
And I think Terry Moore is able to communicate so many things you know, he's a show not tell guy. So we see a quiet scene. We see that Francine's mother now lives with Francine and Cachou and their two daughters. And, you know, Francine goes in and gives her mum a glass of water. And we see that there's a little sort of breast cancer looking pamphlet on the thing. And so it just communicates a lot very, very clearly and very efficiently. And I think he's a real treasure.
Yeah, those heartbreaking moments were kind of like the highlight of this issue for me.
Absolutely.
More Francine. Bring her back.
I want to know about their kids.
Yeah, me too. So I read some of Shadow Man number 2 this week by Andy Diggle, Steven Segovia, and Ulysses Ariola through Valiant this week. And
I will never stop being amused by that name.
Ulysses Ariola.
Yep. I feel like Andy Diggle is a strange choice to do this book, right?
Yeah, I can't say I'm really enjoying any of his character work on this book, so yeah. I don't think I'm going to be continuing with it.
Cool.
Finally, though, a book that I really enjoyed immensely is a big, stupid video game manga tie-in called Mega Man Master Mix, in which all of the Mega Man games from the 80s through Capcom are kind of told, like, you know, these are like arcadey shoot 'em up kind of games that don't really benefit from any story at all, but we're getting these like fantastic over-the-top manga takes on the actual story behind each of these games. And they are just delightful in every way, like beautifully colored with, you know, ridiculously silly dialogue different robots being reprogrammed to destroy humanity. And
great.
The evil Dr. Wily laughing above it all. And, you know, you have the hero of Rock, a.k.a. Mega Man, you know, just trying to beat a little guy and bust through all this mess. It's really a lot of fun. It's written by Hitoshi Ariga. Written and drawn by Hitoshi Ariga with a translation by Josh Perez. One of the highlights of my reading week this week.
Awesome.
That is it for this episode. May we all go and eat pizza in peace. You can find us online at facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast or join our group with many, many members, some of whom can talk about comics even with the worst hangovers imaginable. facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast is where you can join us. We are on Twitter at @serious_issues or individually at Siobhan Coombe. Siobhan CBG.
Mm-hmm.
And
for Coombs.
My head hurts so much right now that you could be like, actually, Levin's so my name is Helen. And I'd be like, fuck, all right. I'm at LevDog, LevDowg. Is that it? I guess
so. Yeah, this Saturday is Free Comic Book Day. Please come or visit your local your local comic book store. There's some really good shit coming out next week. Action Comics Special number 1. Really much else from DC,
to be
honest.
Have you read any of the Free Comic stuff? I read the Image one, which had some cool stuff in it. And I checked out the first look at the Nick Spencer, Ryan Otley Spider-Man stuff.
Oh, yeah. Does that look cool?
It's pretty good.
I forgot that was happening.
Pretty good. It involves a beloved character from my favorite thing that Nick Spencer's ever written, which is the Superior Foes of Spider-Man being a main character now.
Oh, good.
That's good.
No, that's good.
You liked Superior Foes, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's a bummer. Oh, well.
I hated that bug character because she was just always like, I want to fuck Ant-Man.
Yeah, right. No, you're thinking of Ant-Man.
Yeah, I still don't like it anyway. but I'm excited about Avengers coming out next week. Captain America 701 next week. Yes, please. Also, that's about it. That's all I'm excited about.
Okay, sweet. Be excited about other things instead.
We're getting an alien egg cookie jar.
And remember, if you drink a lot, make sure you have 2 liters of water before bed.
Yeah.
It's really smart.
Otherwise, you look like a very sad dad.
Oh. See you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.